Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
And then again, remember what Aldous Huxley talked about. Now, Aldous Huxley was a member of the inner group. He knew the agenda. He sat in on planning with his brother. Julian Huxley was a big planner of all this stuff. And Aldous Huxley talked about in Brave New World. It wasn't some fantasy that just came into his head. And he talked about it. And Julian Huxley, the brother, was a bit more out with it because he worked for UNESCO and he was all for Planned Parenthood, you know, start killing off the lower classes and so on, and shape society under the guise of socialism. And we're here to help you, haha. But he also said that we're part of the scientific class. This is the order. This is how they see society. You have the ones at the very top who are the financial elite. They are the true financial. These are not the guys down below who own a whole bunch of houses and streets and cities. No, these are the ones at the very top who own nations. That's what they're talking about there. And you have a dominant minority. That's how Aldous talked about it, a dominant minority. And beneath that, you have what helps the dominant minority are the workers, the real workers. The workers are the managers on behalf of the dominant minority. So the dominant minority have all the finances and so on. They just give occasional suggestions. It's all put into place by managerial classes that work it and make it all happen. Make it so, as they say, and they make it so. And then you have an academic elite working with the scientific elite to manage all the general populations. And Huxley said, we're part of that. He says, that's his family's purpose, by the way. He says, we're part of the scientific elite. So his brother's into UNESCO and social engineering and family planning across the planet and things like that, you see. And you go back into the Huxleys, and Sir Thomas Huxley was Darwin's bulldog who took over eugenics, you see, and evolution, the theory of evolution, which went right off. It was really completely tied with eugenics from the beginning. Of course it was. So we're run by all these different managerial classes, who are intergenerational, and they boast about it quite openly. Aldous Huxley went through it in a similar form because he talked about suggestible people and the percentages of primary suggestible people who would go under whatever they're told immediately under the spell of it, and using techniques like Bernays laid out way back 1920s and 30s and 40s. And Huxley was giving his talk to Michael Wallace in the 1960s, I think. He mentioned a certain percent of the public would go under immediately to suggestion put out by authority. And they'd buy whatever they were told to buy or behave the way they're supposed to behave, even read what they were supposed to read, magazine-wise and so on, by advertisers. They fell for it very quickly. And he said but then there's a percentage that simply don't go under the spell right away. But you can get another 10% under quick if you give them more and more reinforcement of the suggestion. Oh, come on now, just try it a bit longer and you'll find that it'll work. And just coach them a little. And sure enough, they'll eventually succumb to it as well. And that's really, that leaves a small percentage that can be hypnotized and brought under through the direct suggestion by authority figures. And that really goes by, in today's society, the behaviorists know, they're taught this kind of stuff, how to manipulate us all. And in fact, a lot of your tax money goes into funding the big paychecks and the studies from the neuroscientists and behaviorists and psychologists that make their money like parasites off of us, so that they can basically manage the host that they feed off, which is all of us, of course. And we put up with it. We put up with it. And that's a sad thing to me, very sad. Folk aren't ticked off a little bit about how they're managed and manipulated. And as I say, we pay for all these studies through our tax money so that we can be used, basically. We're looked upon as cattle. And unfortunately, and I've met lots of the people in the sciences of behaviorism and psychology that work in these kind of fields, and like the behavioral insights teams that work across the internet, managing your thoughts and what you should be looking at and don't look at this, and even shaming you and all that stuff, all paid by our tax money, big fat salaries. And I see them in the same category as the KGB or the Stasi would be. I really do. I lump them all together, these people who are manipulating our minds and our thoughts and using all dirty tricks to try to make us do what they want us to do. They're disgusting people. They really are. And that's society. So we shouldn't really put up with it, but again, most folk do. And they know that, the exact percentages that go along right away. You can never have honesty. You can't have honesty of any possible kind. Even if you had some decent people, in a miracle situation where you had one or two decent folk at the very top of pharmacology, which wouldn't happen in this cutthroat system, the competitors would go bypass and do their own thing anyway and do whatever they thought was unethical to get more profit. They'd do it, absolutely. You know. And that's why they lobby government, and that's why they put politicians into power, financially. And that's also why they combine with elitists and eugenicists that want to change society by using, again, diet injections and injunctions. Pharmacology, and Aldous Huxley warned us all in a certain sense, where he said it, not just at Berkeley, at Berkeley University, but also in his books. He had some non-fiction books as well, where he talked about the follow-up to his book, you know, Brave New World, and how all these things in it could be and probably would be implemented eventually by those who had the power in society to implement upon the public. And that's all happened. So he's Mr. Mill's character that he did warn, again, at least on public television, on the Mike Wallace interview, where he said, well, with the techniques we have now and where it can go, because they knew the rate of change in society, in these behavioral sciences and so on. He said that the techniques of persuasion, they could get people to do things eventually that perhaps wasn't in their best interest. He knew how advanced it was then in the 1960s and where it would end up going. And this all happened. He was careful not to say so much in the talk that he was all for it. But you got to remember, too, that Aldous Huxley belonged to the Huxley family, a scientific elite. That's what his brother called it, a scientific elite, the branch of the family, amongst many other parts of the scientific elite, the dominant science group that ran the world on behalf of the dominant minority, the ones who run all the finances above them. So the scientific elite below them, including all kinds of behaviorists and scientists and social scientists, they worked for those who ruled, you know, and they used their sciences like spells over the public, you see. So he was careful to mention the other part that they believe in, of course, and always did believe in that talk with Wallace. He did start off his talk, well, you know, the population of the world, and he mentioned what they claimed it might have been then, and how it would double or whatever by the year, whatever, 2000, whatever it happened to be at that time, because they're always fudging figures, so it doesn't matter. So he lets you know right off the bat, there's too many people. He doesn't go into his deeper beliefs that there's too many useless eaters, because he was an elitist himself, Aldous Huxley. As his brother was, you know. His brother really became one of the head members of socialism because they guide society into family planning, depopulation, all the rest of it under the guise of helping the working class. So you got to understand, there was nothing that in eugenics and elitism that he didn't know about. He belonged to, that's why he could write Brave New World years before, but 1932, 1933, because he mixed with that, those world groups. He had world meetings, those groups, you know. And they've always had world meetings. And Huxley also talked about, well, you know, if you let it go this way, we'll have all kinds of physical problems with people who have hereditary ailments. He was also talking about IQ levels and so on. Eh? And he said, he says some people, for instance, if you wear glasses, he said, well, then your eyes aren't perfect, and so you'll pass that on to someone else, and they'll have bad eyes. He's talking about supremacy of eugenics and how the eugenical supreme classes should go on. That's what he was talking about. It's amazing how folk can like what they're hearing, and they're not hearing what they're hearing, but they like what they're hearing. You know? It's coming from a guy who is so well educated and from an elite point of view. He has such a great command of vocabulary. And it's true enough, the vocabulary of these guys was almost a 17th century vocabulary, because they were taught that way, to talk very carefully about every single vowel and syllable, and that's how they pronounced them, you know. Very impressive at the time. But folk often don't really hear what's being said. As I've mentioned this before, mammals look towards parents to warn them. All mammals do, of what's dangerous to them or what's wrong. And it's like bear cubs are quite pleasant little characters when they're young, and they will follow you because they want to come up and see, what are you? You know, you're a little creature. And they're curious, but they have no fear. And that's why the mother will come up and kill you, you see. Because she's been trained through experience that people are bad, and so bad people can't go near her cub, quite simply. So we should be doing the same. Parents, supposed to be the same. Human parents should warn their children, but yet you give it all over to the state through education. As Bertrand Russell said, we should think we have to take children from their parents pretty well at weaning stage, get them away from the parents, so they wouldn't be contaminated with the ideas and culture of their parents. But he said now that we have found very effective means of indoctrination, he says we can use let the parents keep and pay for the upkeep of the children, while the state will use these techniques for the indoctrination of the children so effectively that when they come home, any input by the parent on any particular topic will be cancelled out by the child. They won't listen to them or accept it. They'll only accept that which they're taught at school. And that's how that was all done when I was growing up. That was obvious, you know, at school when I went there. I knew it. I could tell. But, you don't realise that this is how you've been raised. And horror will come when they collapse everything again, because it will come, because the system, they've got so many books put out by the big members in society, the big members of all these big organizations, they help rule us all, about the future and even the size of the population they'd like on the planet. Now, they're not giving you some fantasy that they have. They're giving you how it's going to be, and they will drive you into it painlessly with your own cooperation, just as Huxley talked about, Aldous Huxley. A kind of painless concentration camp, he said, where you'll love your servitude. And along with your servitude, you'll say, oh, well, my life isn't that important. I've had my... That was what the whole Brave New World was about. Once your time was up, you could get euthanized painlessly with the right drugs and so on. Happy drugs. That wasn't all. That wasn't imagining. He talked about how it was going to be. Brave New World Revisited. He mixed with all the top world rulers of the day, who helped plan all this stuff. They planned the next 100 and 200 years. Many committees, they still exist today in foundations. Remember what was Aldous Huxley mentioned on his interview on television that he had long ago with Mike Wallace? And he says that with these techniques that could be coming down the pike, and he's talking a long time ago, he said, and he mentioned drugs too, and other psychotherapy techniques, basically, or psychological techniques. He said it make the people go along with things and accept things that perhaps they shouldn't accept, meaning for their own good. I've gone through the different studies they're doing on all of us, on our DNA, family histories, everything, you know. It's not happening by itself. It's an old program that's underway. And it used to keep its head down after it got in trouble with world wars and people actually putting it into to even more brutal and quicker effect, you might say. But as I say, we're going sterile in the West too, and that's not by chance. Anyway, that same article to do with Huxley, Aldous Huxley, who gave you Brave New World and talked about the 0.5% that should have the control of everybody else, should have the control, you see. He also says further pondered the problem of dysgenics and democracy. See, a problem of dysgenics and democracy. You understand that? In several published essays dating from the late 1920s and early 1930s with titles such as What is Happening to Our Population? And Are We Growing Stupider? He defended the eugenics policies of encouraging higher birth rates amongst the intellectual classes and sterilizing the lower class as unfit, which he believed would improve the inherited mental abilities of future generations and lead to responsible citizenship. So there you go. This is for the planet, remember, folks. His interest in eugenics was more than a brief flirtation, as suggested by one recent biographer. On the contrary, his ongoing support for so-called race betterment, this is what they called it, was typical of the left-leaning British intellectuals in the interwar period. His writing, including his dystopian novel Brave New World, reflected public anxieties about the supposedly degenerating hereditary quality of the population, how this decline would affect England's economic and political future. For Huxley, at this time in his life and in the social context, eugenics was not a nightmare prospect, but rather the best hope for designing a better world if used in the right way by the right people. And guess who they are, eh? This neglected aspect of his early scientific and political thinking must be taken into account when unpacking the multiple and perhaps conflicting meanings of Brave New World. So it was a satire on contemporary culture, a prediction of biological advances, and a commentary on the social roles of science and scientists, and a plan for reforming society. Now, it's no joke that they want to drastically reduce the population. And they're doing it, actually. And they're pretty efficient, I'd say, are the ones who manage us all. They're rather efficient. And they have lots of helpers who are awfully well paid too, and the strata coming down from the little capstone at the top. It's well underway, of course. They're quite confident that even the future studies, the such other future studies for the British military said the same thing. They expect by the year 2030, there'll be a sudden drop of population. That's what they said. Didn't explain why, but they never tell you much as to how they're going to do things to you. So once again, we're living in a very controlled system. The world to them is a laboratory. The general population are the lab rats in the laboratory and mice. And even the terminology they use with the population is similar. You see, there's real beings. The important people, the somebodies, and then there's the rest, you see, the lab rats and the mob and all the other terms that they have for the general population. Politicians have it too. And politicians at the top, all their leaders belong to the same clubs, especially one big club at the top. And Carl Quigley did go through that, and others have done it since, about the Council on Foreign Relations or Royal Institute for International Affairs and all that. The guys who gave you world government ideas and worked towards it up to the present time. And they see the world as theirs. They have no problem employing great people in academia in other words, great minds in their particular fields, to utilise the techniques of mass persuasion on the general population, cultural change of all kinds on the general population. And the sad truth is, with enough time and money behind it and the repetition, they can generally get the public to accept whatever it is they're pushing. And yet, most things that are used to persuade you to do something that perhaps you shouldn't do, the terms that Aldous Huxley talked about on his interview with Mike Wallace, he said that the techniques that they had then, in the 1950s, were effective on persuasion, persuading the public. And he said, perhaps these techniques are so persuasive and effective that they're making people accept things that perhaps it's not in their best interest to accept. What's much worse today? You better hear the warnings and motivate yourselves, because everyone here is involved. Everybody's involved right now. And you're all going to get the ultimatum given to you individually. You know that. You know, I look at different authors and the lives of some of these authors, like Aldous Huxley, a man who obviously was up there in the planning. He was in because of his family connections and on the big agenda. That's why he came out with Brave New World, that science would dominate and control, and that's all there would be, no mention of a supreme being or anything above that sort of thing. Some deity, some god. And Brave New World, it was just purely secular and science running everything, right down to the breeding of people. And the non-human births, even or pregnancies, really, everybody's grown in a test tube to an extent, and sperm and ovum came out of the same selected batches over and over. They'd been altered to perfection, supposedly. So you had the division of labour, the communistic division of labour, for those who don't know about that. That's what the alpha, the betas, etc., were designed to do. And the alphas at the top were the natural leaders. They were designed to be the leaders. And there's Alpha Plus as well. But all the way down the way, right down, they had the division of labor was done right down to menial tasks for certain types. And therapies and drugs, naturally, to keep people in line. If the ones at the bottom with their monotonous tasks and repetitive tasks, etc., an advanced civilization that they created. But there's no mention anywhere of any particular deity. Religion had been abolished pretty well. The closest thing to it was in the books from the savages, some of the savages outside their huge, supposed magnificent utopias, the cities outside. It was the savages, remnants of the old ones who were born naturally and things like that, very primitive people, they said. And one of them, the main character in the book, The Savage, that they brought into the city to show him off, had read Shakespeare and other books too. He was talking about beauty and love, and the people couldn't imagine that he was mixing with the betas and so on. They were too happy doing their own thing, free sex, different partner every night. In fact, it was illegal, I think, to have the same partner twice a week. Very important, you see. No bond. You can't. If you bond to anybody, you could be a problem. Now there's two of you against the state, perhaps. It's much easier when it's just you and the state's against you. So a family is taboo. But they bring him in and they kind of laugh at him and see, I think it's kind of quaint with these old-fashioned ideas of bonding and bringing up children yourselves and all that. But they couldn't relate to him at all. But really, when you think about it, what it was showing you is that artificial humans have been altered, literally altered, genetically altered, to be created, to be what they are by humans, weren't really different. They weren't the same human as the savage at all. He was natural, and they were not. They were unnatural. It has been said that George Orwell's idea of a future would be, and one of his worries would be, of censorship of literature and data, basically. It'd be censored in a totalitarian regime. And Aldous Huxley in Brave New World had a different approach, that we'd be so flooded with data, but it would all be entertainment and pornography and things like that, that that's how we'd submit to being ruled in a kind of fantasy land of make-believe by a totalitarian regime, basically, at the top. A painless servitude, as Huxley called it, where you'd enjoy being a servant or even a slave. So despondency, hammer it like with Huxley said, he said, you know, drugs and soma drugs, and you're getting all kinds of drugs legalized now, not just the marijuana. Some of the leaders have said a couple of years ago they'd like to legalize all the drugs. Well, that is coming, folks. And with it also comes the mayhem, because drugs destroys the brains. And you'll see more and more chaos, which gives them a right then to take more and more rights away from the public in all sorts of ways. And again, most folk, again, that the same people who automatically will tell you, well, I know they do this and they do that to us, but, well, they know all about me. Well, these are the same people who go along with every new law that comes along until, you know, that's the way it is. The majority always go along with it. So we're going through a massive system of massive changes, and everything is so minutely controlled that nothing is missed. Nothing at all is missed today. So Aldous Huxley, who was a very interesting guy, I mean, these guys are really interesting in that initially they're all for all the same agenda as all the scientists are for, but he softens himself as life goes on, and he comes out with some little warnings to the general population. And you have to realize that the guy is not as ruthless as some people might think he is. Certainly not as his brother. His brother was a terrible, ruthless character who was all for vast mandatory legislation to stop folk breeding, all the wrong folk breeding, you know. But that's what Aldous Huxley said. He says people will come to love their oppression. You'd be oppressed and you won't even know it. To adore the technologies that undo their capacities to think. Okay? People come to love their oppression, to adore the technologies that undo their capacities to think. Most folk don't do deep thinking today. Everything's laid on for you. When you think about it, the amount of TV you watch in your lifetime, you're watching the work. I mean, this is the work of people who are paid to put that work out, to make it and put it out there. But would you pay a plumber to watch him do what he does? You see what I'm saying? When you stop and realize what you're watching, and it's called programming because it's full of programming and updates and how you should think about different things and all the fiction that you're soaking up. It's essential, again, just like the media is, for government or governance to control everything and to update your views on things through fiction. It's the best idea of all is fiction. And you're more apt to accept it than someone who just orders you to change your thinking about this or that, you see? Bring an emotion, you can make them believe anything, and they'll adopt those opinions. Well understood. Children especially, that's why they hammer children so much, to make sure that they have the latest indoctrination for things that haven't even happened yet in society, which will happen down the road. They're already programmed to accept it through their early indoctrination. It's a simple science, it's not difficult at all. So you're living through an agenda, of course, and agendas are very real. Those in charge of the agendas, the world society, the globalistic future, the behaviorists and psychologists and so on, and neuroscientists that work for the big boys and gals, are quite open about their agendas, you see. and they have ways to make us all kind of look forward to it, the same way as advertising, as I say, made you feel that buying this or buying that was going to make you happy. The whole point is they can make you less and less happy, so that you will take the brain chip when it's offered. And there's no doubt at all, in the 90s they said, because it already experimented as far back as Delgado's era and with the Tavistock group in Britain that Aldous Huxley talked about when he worked with him for a little while. He certainly had access to some of their experiments, and he'd walk around and observe their experiments too with real people. This agenda we're living through, it's not a conspiracy, it's published, for goodness sake. It's published by those who are in the doing of it all, because the public really don't care so much now. They really don't. And Aldous Huxley was awfully right when he said that the people would be trained, in a sense, and led and guided and prompted to love their servitude. If you give children access to the candy store and say, help yourself, they're going to do it, aren't they? Well, in this system, for knowing all the different drives and instincts that people have, you're given free rein to a good extent to do what you want with sexual impulses and so on, to an extent, as I say. And people go at it. Nothing comes out of it generally, but that's been permitted now. Awfully interesting to see it's all done. And I was going through again the old documentation from Julian Huxley and Aldous Huxley, the two brothers who actually were descended from a whole family that were interbred, in fact, down through a few hundred years, even with the Darwins to an extent too. That's just the way it is. The selective breeding has been awfully important. This actually preferred selective breeding and eugenics has been really a big thing from Britain, for instance. I'm sure it was done in many other countries too in, say, the early 1800s, maybe even late 1700s onwards. But we have records of it in Britain, at least, that are published to an extent. Now, psychology and behaviorism and the neurosciences are all combined and have been for a long, long time. Studying humans, we are the main sources of study, humans, of course, for our behavior and our natural responses to things, too. There's nothing that really is not known about how we'll react. They also have the percentages down pretty accurately of the majority of the public. They knew back in the days of Aldous Huxley, who talked about most people being really hypnotizable or suggestible, extra suggestible. And because they're prone to suggestibility, you said about 60% of the public fall under the spell of a well-laid-out spiel or propaganda that wants to make them do something or buy something or behave in a different fashion or believe something. So 60%, if it's said by professionals, will grab it immediately and disparage it, you see. Very similar to what Brzezinski said many, many years later in his own books. But Aldous Huxley said that he gives a talk at Berkeley, which you can still get if it's still up on YouTube or somewhere. But he said that another 10%, you see, or even 20%, could be done with more, a bit more pressure and time and patience applied by the person who wants you to do what they want you to do. It says you could gradually bring them, oh, this didn't work. Yeah, but try a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that and give it a bit of time and we'll work on that. And sure enough, you can bring them into the belief of it too, whatever it is, with a bit more time. And it says that then you're left with maybe 10 or 15%. You see, these are the hardest ones to bring under. Some can't be brought under at all. And today that's more of a rarity. Most folk go under the spell of the professional indoctrination that we get fed all the time. Persuading people is a science. I hope you understand that. It's not just someone yapping. It's a science, and they're taught to do it. The teachers are given toolkits to brainwash the children to make sure the children will be true believers in whatever's being taught. and come out with it too. And they, it works awfully well. They know how to as well, just like the person trying to make you believe something you're not supposed to, Cornelia Huxley, that you perhaps you even shouldn't for your own benefit. You said that with more persuasion, a lot more will come under, but the last grouping won't happen to them. Maybe 93% can go under eventually with a lot more pressure and persuasion, or even bribery, in fact. Oh, try that. We'll even pay you to try that, and blah, 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 and away they go. But maybe 7% or so, or even less, can't be brought under. They're not hypnotizable. And news isn't even news now, as you know. It's basically opinions. You have what I think even Aldous Huxley called in Brave New World a kind of infotainment, I think it was called, like information entertainment combined. That's what you have today. It's all about who's in Hollywood and who's in the latest show on television. That's not news, folks. No. But as I say, we're going into this new society. Most folk are oblivious, as they are actually adapting to the changes so quickly themselves, as their masters knew they would, because really we're all under incredible psychological control and scientific conditioning from from the time you're born. It was already perfected, and that was admitted to by guys like Bertrand Russell back in the 40s and 50s. So we're heading along a guided track. It's interesting, even Aldous Huxley mentioned that the most folk are unhappy, he said. And what's wrong, really, with drugging them, using pharma and all of these things to make them happy, as he called it, happy. Not happy, but happy. And he saw no problem with that at all. And there was a man who literally went to Tavistock to watch mental patients being put, being guided with electrodes in their brain, with wires attached in those days. You're in the takedown phase. And that's why, just like Brave New World, written in the 1930s, the early 30s, not by a guy with a crystal ball, but Aldous Huxley, who mixed his family, belonged to this managerial elite class, who looked at all the common popular people, they call it populism, and the popular people, the people who like popular music and popular, which was beneath them, of course. But they were quite open about it, that there'd be too many people. Until his death, Aldous Huxley, along with his brother, naturally Julian, who was worse, talked about the fear of overpopulation, of all the wrong kind of people. And people thought at the time, well, it wouldn't affect us, and say in Britain, you know, you're thinking this guy's got something in common with you. No, they didn't. you're as much of a peasant as the people across the world in some supposedly third world country. That's it there. So anyway, they talked about it in Brave New World in the 1930s and how they'd bring in a system where the state would raise the children. Never mind the fact that they would literally genetically engineer the people, the right kind of people with the right genes, with gene replacements and all the rest of it, and to get the right categories of work distribution for different jobs, from the intellectual to the menial. And they would breed them all, different classes of them. And they would get lots of sex, hypersexualized, lots every night. In fact, it was almost mandatory you had to have sex. But you would have a sterile relationship. There'd be no offspring. They even make it taboo to have sex with the same person twice in a week. So promiscuity had to be shared, you see. A lot of these ideas came from Plato and their Republic, where literally women would be held in common. Well, women may object to that, so you don't tell them that they're all there to be shared around with everybody. You just tell them that they're free, you know, and give them a paycheck and give them a culture that basically gives you exactly what you wanted to until they're all in common. You know? These things are not by chance. They don't happen by chance. And then you have, again, in Brave New World, you have the primitive type who is born naturally outside. There's a few settlements of them outside the big protected cities, apart from the genetically modified ones, who are still wild. They're the wild ones. But because they're wild, they can still think. and they can point out the things that are wrong. And what's absent from it all is a sense of a great love, and it's not just happy, but love for things and great spiritual feelings and so on. That those that are generally modified were laughed at. They thought this primitive guy who was brought in as a novelty and an experiment, they thought he was quaint and all that, with strange ideas about having real mothers and real fathers, since they were all born in, basically, as you would call it, test tube types. They thought it was quaint that he'd have these strange notions. And he quotes Shakespeare and so on, and gives them stories about high emotion that they couldn't quite get grasp it, because they were completely materialistic. They lived for the moment. That was their life. And then, just like John Dewey and others prescribed long before, and again, that's where a lot of the ideas came from Huxley's book. But John Dewey, in his school of thought, they helped create the educational system for America and a good part of Europe, same groups. They would train the children that death was normal, and you'd be allocated a certain amount of years, and then you would die. And nobody would bemoan you dying. There'd be a celebration of you dying, and you would die humanely, you see. And now you're an age now, today, where when you hit a certain age, they want to euthanize you openly, very openly, and they're promoting, this is an agenda you're going through. This isn't the brainchild of professors who are living now, dreamed up themselves. They're following a script, and certain ones are selected to reaffirm the script to the public to get you used to the idea through repetition of it. And to, well, I guess I had to hurt them eventually. And there you go. It's coming down. And you see the movement towards eliminating free thought. And free thought will encompass a lot of things you won't agree with. Absolutely. But when you're forbidden to even think about them, you're in big trouble. Big, big trouble. Because we have the capacities and the technologies to introduce techniques into society. They're already in play, by the way, and you get a lot worse though, with technological means of computers, cell phones, electronics, etc. We have all that system. And drugs, of course, as Aldous Huxley warned about, which obviously had been discussed even in his day, of sedating the public. Now, again, back to Charles Galton Darwin, he said that slavery has always existed on Earth in one form or another. And I suppose it always will. It's astonishing. And Aldous Huxley had similar things to say too, of dominant minorities running the show, a dominant minority at the top, a scientific group beneath them, running all the show for those who are at the top, the dominant minority. You know? You're seeing the true system emerge of, again, authoritarianism, with new types of commissars, not called commissars, they're called government agents, or the government's really farmed off many of its real functions and obligations to private corporations and even NGOs, which again, that turns into the Soviet system, ruled by councils. Most folk don't care, and I'm well aware of that too. I'm not despondent, by the way. I never get despondent about things. You might think it's depressing, but if I was to be a cheerleader for the people, most of the people don't really care, just like Aldous Huxley talked about. Most will go into the flow through this. They're so, you know, soaked with entertainment, all kinds of free sex, without consequences, they think, anyway. And even a universal basic income for many folk. And this is, so they're quite happy. So as Huxley said, the people will come to love their servitude. They wouldn't object to it. I can remember Bill Cooper talking about this back in the 90s, when he says a lot of folk will come to love socialism. This true authoritarian type of socialism. It's another way of saying the same thing. But Orwell said you'll be as a servitude. Quite similar, isn't it? Most folk don't know it. They're even living through all this stuff. They adapt to it. We're always run by a dominant minority. Which makes a sad, sad statement on the past again, because there's always been a dominant minority, as Aldous Huxley mentioned, and he should know, because he was on the fringes of the higher group. He was definitely a scientist, or he belonged to the scientific group that served the masters, the dominant minority above him. But he also knew that you always give a fake past and a history to the general public. So they'll grow up thinking that they're good people, and everything they've ever done across the world was always for the better, the greater good, as they say. The elite literally will publish things. It's like legality. And often when they pull something off, they'll even go overboard and boast about it, which is revelation of the method, how they got the public to accept this, or how they cleverly steered you all through different techniques to accept this, that are things you shouldn't have accepted. The very things that Aldous Huxley talked about, the author of Brave New World, where he said in interviews with George Wallace in the 1950s, he said his concern was that with the techniques that they can be used today, you know, the incredible arts of persuasion, where you don't even know you're being persuaded, you're being prompted, you're being nudged, most folk are recipients of opinions. That's what I say. You're a recipient. You're not someone who literally analyzes opinions, your own either. You simply adopt them. They're given to you, and you're it's almost preordained. You will adopt a particular point of view according to your upbringing or your class, or who you vote for, left or right or whatever. And whoever class or group or you belong to, or political party, they've got ready-made opinions for you, which will always guide you into the one road eventually that they're all on, which is the right opinion, you see. And they're using techniques that were well understood back in Huxley's days and before. He mentioned that too, the techniques of manipulating your thoughts, the Bernays techniques, where subconscious or even unconscious motivations, these instincts that you're born with, can be manipulated. You won't consciously work your way through it, but you can use them against the person to bring them to the opinions and conclusions and behavior that you want them to have. That's very obvious today. Incredible ongoing, thousands of experiments on psychology and behaviors, every day done on populations, every day. And if you had 10,000 lifetimes to live and study all their papers on it, because it's just incredible what it's churned out all the time on how to manipulate you for this, that, or whatever. It's just absolutely astonishing. You can't live long enough to read it all. And they won't stop, you know. The countless surveys right now on getting the people to comply with the COVID lockdowns, comply with wearing face masks, even getting other segments of society to turn on the folk who won't comply. So they can do that too. And the folk who will turn on them don't even know they're getting manipulated. They think they're coming to these decisions and this behaviour of shouting at folk by themselves. Nothing's further from the truth. So Aldous Huxley said that. He says that he was worried that the techniques, the scientific methods that were understood back in his day, back then, we get the public to accept things that perhaps it wasn't in their best interest to accept. That's how perfected that he knew that they were, and they would get a lot more perfected in a very short few years, in fact.
Back to our guest, Alan Watt. Alan, you use a term that to me is so much more fitting for these people. A lot of times, especially in Patriot Radio, you hear the term elite used, but you use the term psychopaths, which I think is a much, much better term, and I'm glad to see somebody using that on a regular basis.
Yeah, they're also called the pathocracy, because the pathocracy is a term coined by a lot of psychologists and psychiatrists that came out of the ex-Soviet bloc, and they were studying the tactics of their own leaders. They realized that there were psychopaths running them too. And a label was eventually put on of the pathocracy. We find Aldous Huxley, who was a member of this dominant minority. He called them the dominant minority. And what Huxley said at his speech in Berkeley in the 1960s was that there had always been in history a dominant minority, and he could see no reason why there shouldn't always be one. And of course he knew that because they ran what we call the economic system entirely. They're the characters who own the resources of the world and the merchandising of the world. They own all of it, basically. And they run the politics, too.
Why would anybody think that there should be a dominant minority? Because, these people, Alan, have done nothing but brought pain and misery on those that they've tried to, the majority they've tried to keep as inferior.
That's right, and that's the interesting part of it. I mean, even Plato talked about this because he was also a member of the aristocracy in his time. And the Republic, the book called The Republic that Plato wrote, he laid out the foundations for this world system. They call it a utopia for themselves. And he called the dominant minority the guardian class, those who are the guardians of the world. It's their world. But he talked about a time when they would bring out, thousands of what we now call bureaucrats. He called them helpers that would help run the its. The its were the common people beneath them, the vast majority of people. And they'd actually breed them for special tasks and purposes, just like you breed domesticated animals.
Right.
So every one of the top characters goes by Plato's philosophy. They think it's the natural order of the predator, and they have no problem talking about this amongst themselves. They are a predatory class. And when you break down the word predatory, you have predate. In other words, they predate what we call civilization or history. They've always been here, and they call it the law of nature. So they have a thousand rationalizations and justifications for why they should be at the top and why they should act like gods on the world.
And yet we're the small, helpless sheep that without their astute shepherding, we'd all be lost.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.